from Community Blood Services of Illinois, the nonprofit agency providing all donated blood for patients in Champaign-Urbana, Charleston-Mattoon, Danville, and Effingham. Donation information at 367-2202 or on the web at bloodservices.org. Blood donation. It's about life.
Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia de Camera. Season tickets are now available for the 2004-2005 season. This season's performances feature the Beaux Arts Trio's Golden Anniversary, String Serenade with the Pacifica Quartet, American Classics with Rudolf Hocken, and David Harris' Much Ado About Mozart, and An Evening of Romance featuring pianist Ian Hobson. For information about season tickets, call 333-6280.
Good morning and welcome back to the second hour of Focus 580, our morning talk show. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. Producing the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, and Henry Frayne is at the controls. A quick mention of tomorrow morning on the show, we'll be having two programs from the Focus Archives. Both of them are nautical in nature. In the first part of the show, a conversation with Barry Strauss about what is generally regarded as being the most important naval engagement of the ancient world. It was the Battle of Salamis that pitted the ancient Greeks against the Persians. The Greeks won. Some people argue that if things had gone the other way, perhaps world civilization would indeed have taken a different track. That was an interview from last month, and then going something a little bit more contemporary, but still having to do with the naval world. Thomas Parrish talks about his book, The Submarine, A History, and that was a show originally broadcast in June. So we're here generally weekday mornings from 10 to noon, 10 different topics every week. We always welcome your questions and calls. Tomorrow morning, though, archives, and that means on those programs we will not be taking calls. Surveys show us that significant numbers, really large numbers of Americans, are using some form of complementary and alternative medicine. And it could be anything from acupuncture and massage to therapies that involve modifying the diet, homeopathic treatment, tai chi, yoga. That's just a few. Now, this morning in this part of the show, we'll be talking a bit about why it is that alternative medicine has become so popular and how physicians are thinking about these alternatives and indeed how they feel about their patients seeking out what at least at one time might have been considered to be unconventional therapies. And our guest for the program this morning is Dr. Patrick Massey. He is medical director for complementary and alternative medicine at the Alexian Brothers Hospital Network, and that's based in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. And he's been working in this area for a number of years. In addition to his job as medical director there of complementary and alt med, he's also the director of the Physician Acupuncture Training Program has done a lot of work looking at what kind of things are happening out there with alternative medicine. He has a graduate of the Rush University Med School. He also has a PhD from Northwestern University Graduate School of Medicine and also had a two-year graduate associate fellowship at the program in integrative medicine at University of Arizona Med School. And also there's a connection there with Andrew Weil, who's quite well known for his writing about alternative medicine. He's joining us this morning by telephone, and as we talk, questions are certainly welcome. The number 333-9455, that's for Champaign-Urbana folks. We do also have a toll-free line, and that one is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So if folks have questions, they are certainly welcome to call. Dr. Massey, hello.
Yes, hi. Hi, David. How are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
I'm Brian Chipper today.
Great. I'm glad you could be with us. And perhaps some people might remember, now we're going back to last fall, but on our companion station, WILL-TV, we did a program dealing with alternative and complementary health care as a way of telling people about a program in the, I believe this was in the, was it the Frontline series that dealt with these issues that was nationally broadcast, and we wanted to do a little bit of a local show, putting the spotlight on some people here in our area who worked in some of these areas. And Dr. Massey was good enough to come all the way down from Chicago to be on the show. So we appreciated that then, and really glad that you could give us some of your time today.
Well, I appreciate you thinking about Bobby David.
I think that it can be a little confusing from the start, because we use a lot of different terms to describe what it is we're talking about. And everything from alternative and complementary, which are not necessarily different but sort of seem to go together. And people talk about non-mainstream and unconventional, and, you know, there may be all kinds of words that people attach to what we're talking about. And you have to also acknowledge the fact that some of these things, there are other places in the world where people don't think they're unconventional at all, and they're certainly not new. How does one go about defining what it is that we're talking about when we use terms like alternative, complementary, integrative medicine?
Well, I think if we're going to paint with a very broad paintbrush, we need to say that if we were going to say conventional and unconventional, that conventional medicine is what we do in Western medicine today. And what we do in Western medicine today is very different than what we did in Western medicine 50 years ago. Some of the stuff we did 50 years ago would be considered unconventional today. And really, it's just a matter of what is kind of commonly done. And the most common phrases for it, originally it was called alternative medicine, and then not everybody liked that, so we added the phrase complementary medicine. And then once you take complementary and alternative medicine, or CAM, and you combine it with conventional medicine, what you end up with then is integrative medicine, and that's really what I think that we're going to be heading towards is really an integration of the conventional and the unconventional.
Yeah, I think what you're pointing to is that in a lot of places, like the network that you work with there and other places, the physicians are taking a very pragmatic kind of approach, and they are looking at therapies that are available and simply asking this question: do these things work? What works? What benefits do they have? And then trying them. And if indeed it seems that some things do work, they're saying, well, let's use them.
Right, and it's really been a grassroots kind of a pushing in this direction by patients towards their physicians, saying, "Look, I want to try this, and I want to see if it's going to work." What we need to realize is that as good as conventional medicine is, and it's really, really wonderful stuff. I mean, the drugs that we have and the therapies that we have and are just really they're Star Trek kind of concepts. As good as they are in treating the acute medical condition, they tend to fall short in treating the chronic long term medical condition. A lot of unconventional therapies are not very good at treating the acute medical condition, but are excellent or are very good at treating the chronic medical condition. So when you combine really the best of both worlds, I think that you end up with an integrated medical system that I feel will be the blueprint for the world.
I think you also point to something else that is true of this growing interest in alternatives, and that is it seems to be patient-driven, and that's not to say that there aren't physicians who, like yourself, who are interested in investigating and exploring other kinds of therapies. But having said that, it does seem to be more driven by, on the consumer end of things, by people doing their own kind of investigating, their own kind of research, and then, provided that they're willing to discuss those issues with their doctors, they're really the ones who are bringing it up.
Yes, and that's it. That's a really a testimonial to people's persistence and really a desire to return to a more I'm going to say holistic type of medical approach, where you're just not treating a disease, but you're actually treating a patient, and you're looking not just for the term, but you're looking for the long term. In defense of the physicians, most of the physicians I have dealt with, and I deal with a lot of different physicians over the years, if they have time, they have interest in it. But given the constraints on their time, the constraints on the educational demands. There's actually very, very little time for exploring new avenues. So the fact that their patients come in, three or four patients a week will come in and say, I want to try acupuncture, it really kind of forces them to shift gears and to look seriously at non-conventional approaches. And I think that's very, very good.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that often when you ask physicians about some of these things, what their opinion of non-conventional approaches would be, that many physicians would simply say, I don't know, and that might reflect a feeling within the field of medicine that we really don't know. I mean, in the sense that you might talk about a particular kind of therapy, and you wouldn't really be able to say, well, is it good, is it bad, because it hasn't been subjected to the kind of testing that we generally think is important to determine whether something is effective or not. Are we indeed seeing more kind of research that then physicians would be inclined to accept? At least trying to answer that question about particular therapies: do they have any benefit or do they not?
Yes. And we actually are. I mean, over the past 10 years, there has been really an absolute boon in the amount of research into unconventional therapies, acupuncture, herbs, dietary supplements, For the most part, the research has been good. Has it always been the double-blinded placebo-controlled study? And the answer is no. But to recognize that about 70% of everything we do in medicine has never been tested by that kind of a standard. So I think there are two things that have happened. I think the amount of research that's out there has increased, and there is an increasing recognition by physicians that the double-blinded placebo-controlled study is not really something that's used that's the most common form of research. Research tool used in research, in medical research today.
Hmm. Our guest, just to reintroduce in this part of Focus 580, Dr. Patrick Massey. He is medical director for complementary and alternative medicine at the Alexian Brothers Hospital Network in Elk Grove Village. That's up in the Chicago area, and has been interested in complementary alternative medicine for quite a number of years. Questions are certainly welcome. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere you can hear us. That is 800-222-9455. As I mentioned at the beginning of the program, you're a physician and went to med school at Rush University Med School, and you went to Northwestern. So those are seeming, at least I would consider them to be mainstream, traditional kind of institutions. At what point did you start to become interested in alternative medicine and want to do some more investigating yourself?
Well, I started looking at alternative medicine about halfway through my first year as an intern, and at that time there was no term of alternative or complementary medicine. The NIH hadn't formed the office of complementary and alternative medicine, so nobody really thought very much about it when I went to some of the directors at that Rush and said I was interested in doing some wound healing, looking at different herbal products. It seemed to be a reasonable thing to them. One thing I noticed as an intern was that we were very, very good at taking somebody who came in through the emergency room and was very, very sick. We were very, very good at saving them and helping them get to the point where they could leave the hospital. But what I noticed is that there were a number of patients who kept coming back again and again and again. And as good as we were at treating them in the hospital, apparently we were very, very ineffective at treating them effectively as outpatients. So I started looking into other culturally based medical systems such as Oriental medicine and Ayurvedic medicine from India, where their emphasis is more on preventing the disease than it is in treating the disease, and that really opened up an entire world for me and really was the foundation for everything else that I've done.
Mm-hmm. That really, I suppose, that is a frequent criticism of Western medicine, and that is or the way we practice medicine in the United States, and that is we concentrate a lot on symptoms and trying to take care of people once they've become ill, but we don't pay as much attention as we perhaps should to wellness and trying to keep people from getting sick in the first place. Now, I suppose that's complicated by the fact that there are a fairly standard list of things that we tell people. You know, if you ask the question, what should I do to continue to be healthy? Well, there's a fairly standard list of things we can tell people. And I think it's complicated by the problem that people know what's good for them and yet they don't do it. There are some people who perhaps are very highly motivated, and those may indeed be the kind of people that would be attracted to alternatives. But it's kind of difficult, I think, even sometimes to get people to do the right things, just the very basic right things in the first place, to try to keep them from getting sick, you know, in terms of diet and exercise and don't smoke and, you know, all that sort of standard list of things that everybody really knows. But I'm not sure that we really do a very good job of actually trying to do it.
Right. And I think that the medical system has really become a victim of its own success. I mean, back in the 50s, 40s, 50s, early 60s, 70s, 80s, we became so good at treating the acute medical problem. I mean, you know, people would be having heart attacks who would have died years ago, and we could save them and give them drugs that would help clear out the arteries. And we started to develop all sorts of medications for high blood pressure, and they have been life-saving medications and medications for high cholesterol and so many wonderful things that we have been able to do. But as a result, people in my opinion, have become rather complacent to say that, well, if I get high blood pressure, I can always take a pill. Or if my cholesterol's up, I can always take a pill. I can still go out and eat, whatever I want, but as long as I take my drugs, then I'll be all right. Just imagine a world, you know, where those drugs were perhaps, you know, less available, or there wasn't a hospital within 10 miles of most Americans in the urban community, so that being sick became more of a major issue. I think people would start to focus on their health more. So I think because we have been so successful at treating diseases that we have actually promoted the disease process by significant what I would call deteriorations in our lifestyles.
Hmm. We have a caller, and if there are other people who are listening who would like to call with questions, you're certainly welcome to do that. The number's 333-9455. That's for Champaign-Urbana. Also, we have a toll-free line, 800-222-9455. And we have a caller in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Good morning. You mentioned Ayurvedic medicine, and I've heard that people have been looking at turmeric and curcumin out of curry. Have you got any news on that?
Yeah, let me just say our Ayurvedic medicine is the culturally based medical system of India, and is actually one of the most complicated medical systems in the world. The spices that you're talking about, turmeric and then from that curcumin, are used to make curry yellow. Is what gives curry that kind of a spicy yellow flavor and look. It has some very interesting anti-inflammatory properties. It has been shown in a couple of good studies to be beneficial for the pain associated with arthritis of the knees and the hands. It may be beneficial for some patients with irritable bowel. It, like I said, it helps to reduce inflammation. It is basically a food, and so it carries a very, very, very low toxicity, and really has very, very few documented in interactions with any medications. I have recommended curcumin for.
I think we may have just lost our guest. I don't know if we've had a technical problem here or on his end, and I tell you what, we'll just call him back and see if we can get him back on the line. We did have a problem, I think it was maybe one day last week, where a couple of times it seemed that our telephone system was dumping our guest, and we weren't really sure where the problem was. Sometimes things in the campus-wide phone network outside of our building here in Campbell Hall happened, and it affects the way the system works. So we'll just get the guest back in the phone, and we will continue. In the meantime, we got him right back, and we'll get back to right here. Dr. Massey, we lost you for a second there.
Hello?
Yeah, we got you back there. I'm not sure what happened there.
I'm not sure what happened. Probably sunspots.
Well, it could, you know, here in the part of the campus where we're located, where our building is located, there has been a lot of construction going on. And someone told me the other day they thought that might have something to do with putting a strain on the system. I don't know. Anyway, we didn't dump you. It wasn't something we did on purpose. So anyway, so you were talking about.
Yeah, I just said that I use curcumin with a number of my patients who have arthritis and who have problems taking some of the non-steroidal medications such as Motrin or ibuprofen or some of the COX-2 inhibitors such as Celebrex or Bextra, and we've had good results with it. Hmm. I recognize that curcumin doesn't work as fast as a drug, but I have found it to be very effective over time.
And are you using this in larger amounts than people would get if they were having it in their diet, or are you just suggesting that people are eating more curry?
Well, you'd probably have to eat lots of curry. I usually recommend it as a dietary supplement. It comes as capsules.
I see. Okay.
That way I am positive of the dosage that a patient is getting, and rather than eating it in food, you're not so sure if they're getting a consistent amount.
Okay, so it tastes good, so you might want to have some Indian food, but in addition, if you're interested in this, it is available as a supplement.
Yes.
Okay, and I think that our first caller there just wanted to follow up on his question on line one in Urbana.
Yeah, actually, yeah. I had another question. Mm-hmm. Now that you mentioned the dietary supplement, what kind of dosage are you looking at?
What, for curry?
Yeah.
Not curry. I'm sorry.
For cumin.
Curcumin. Usually between 500 to 1,000 milligrams for somebody without any medical problems, stomach ulcers, things like that. It probably won't have much of an effect on that, but I will tailor the doses depending upon a person's medical history.
Okay, and the other question I had was, you said that Ayurvedic medicine in particular is are directed toward preventing problems, and I was just curious if you if it has, or where a source would be, or perhaps you could tell me if there's anything devoted to the health of the kidneys and the urinary system.
Yeah, as in Ayurvedic medicine and Oriental medicine, there are a number of different kinds of herbs that can be beneficial for the kidneys and the urinary tract system, that depending upon what's going on with it. So if for example if somebody were prone to chronic urinary tract infections, there are things that you can there are things that can be effective in order to prevent them. Okay, if your kidneys and everything are working fine, I wouldn't necessarily say, well, you need to take some herbs to ensure that they're going to continue working fine. I'm also a minimalist. If you don't need to take it, then there's no point in taking it.
Hmm. Well, I do recall that people were talking about cranberries as a health promoter for the kidney system, but apparently you don't agree with that, or?
Oh no, not at all. Cranberries. Certain compounds in cranberries have been shown to prevent the adherence of bacteria to the bladder wall. So for my patients who have chronic or who are susceptible to chronic urinary tract infections, I will recommend either cranberry juice or cranberry capsules for them. Is there any evidence that cranberries make a kidney stronger? And I would say that I haven't seen anything that other than suggestion that in any kind of studies that it would document that.
Hmm. So is there a source I can go to for Ayurvedic medicine in general, or?
Well, the Ayurvedic medicine in the U.S. is really at its infancy stage. 5 years ago, I would say it would be very difficult to find an Ayurvedic practitioner outside of the East or West Coast, and they're becoming more common. The probably one of the best sources would actually be to be go on the internet and look up Ayurvedic medicine, Illinois, be able to find a practitioner that way.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah. All right, and just going back to this question of supplements, I would expect that your advice to anybody who was thinking about trying something like that would be to discuss that with their physician first.
Absolutely. As great of a fan as I am of dietary supplements and various kinds of herbs and things like that, I think that it is absolutely important to let your physician know what you're interested in trying. Some of the dietary supplements and some of the herbs can have profound side effects with different medications. And as knowledgeable as an herbalist might be, or for example, an Ayurvedic practitioner might be, chances are they are not really up to snuff on drug herb in interactions. So definitely run it by your physician.
All right. Our guest in this hour of Focus 580 is Dr. Patrick Massey. He's medical director for complementary and alternative medicine with the Alexian Brothers Hospital Network, based in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. He is, among other things, graduate of the Associate Fellowship in Integrative Medicine with Dr. Andrew Weil and the University of Arizona, and went to school both at Northwestern, has a PhD from the Graduate School of Medicine there, and also is a graduate of the Rush University Med School in Chicago. And we're talking about alternative and complementary medicine. And if you have questions, you certainly are welcome to call us. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. One other website I think that I should mention, because it does have some information if you're interested in just exploring the topic, and that is www.altmed, so that's ALT-MED.org, and that's a site that Dr. Massey's associated with, so there will be information there about him, but also about different kinds of alternative therapies. So if you're interested in at least getting a thumbnail sketch about things like Ayurveda, but also many other kinds of complementary alternative techniques, therapies, there is some information there, and that's one place that you can start. But, of course, if you have Internet access, there should be quite a bit of information on these things available that way. We have some other people who have questions, and we'll go next to line number 3 in Urbana. Hello.
Yeah, for high blood pressure, what would be suggested there in terms of an alternative?
Well, there are many things that can be beneficial for high blood pressure, and Well, although some of these things are classified as alternative, I think that they fall well within the realm of traditional. Probably the first couple things that you would want to do to lower high blood pressure is increase physical activity. And I'm going to say increased relaxed physical activity. So going out and weightlifting probably wouldn't be the best choice. Going for a nice walk, doing a little Tai Chi, little yoga, those things are beneficial. If your weight's not within the optimal range, dropping a few pounds can make a major difference in high blood pressure. There are a number of dietary supplements that will help to support you in that goal. Nutritional fats, omega-3 fats, such as fish oil, may be beneficial. Taking a good multivitamin with calcium may be beneficial. There are a number of different kinds of herbs that have been used in the treatment of high blood pressure. Ginseng is one of them. But again, I don't recommend going out and buying a bottle of ginseng if your blood pressure is up, because it can have some side effects. There is some suggestion that coenzyme Q10, taken in doses of around 400 milligrams a day, can be beneficial. And if you're on water pills, if you're on a Lasix, for example, increasing magnesium in your diet can be very beneficial. Then there's a number of other different herbs out there, and again, I'm just throwing them out there just so that you know that there's things out there that can help. Things like mistletoe has been shown to be beneficial. Increasing the amino acid arginine or taurine in your diet can be beneficial also. But I would start with exercise, stress reduction, meditation. We actually have a program here at the Alexian Brothers in conjunction with the cardiac rehab unit, using specific kinds of breathing forms and very, very light meditation. We've shown that we can lower blood pressure very, very effectively through those kind of means.
So the main culprit is stress is the big one then, right?
Stress is if you're going to take one thing and say what is the one thing that is the main contributor to all disease in the country, it's stress.
Mm-hmm. I mean, now, what about for cholesterol?
I start with nutritional changes. Eat more vegetables. Fewer fatty foods. Exercise, weight loss. Those would be the first three. There are other products out there that can be used to help lower cholesterol. One of the most common ones is something called red yeast rice. Red yeast rice actually contains a small amount of a statin drug. It's the first time that we've ever found a drug occurring in nature that was. But it also contains a lot of statin drug and analogs that I think also contribute to lowering cholesterol without the potential muscle pain that you can get with the statin drugs. There's another product out there called polycosinol. A lot of the research has been done in Cuba, and there's some question as to whether or not the polycosinol in Cuba is the same as the polycosinol here in the U.S. Garlic can help lower it a small amount. Oatmeal every day can help lower it. There's a number of different things. But again, recognize that cholesterol can be the result of increased stress also. So the first thing to do is to lower stress, get some exercise, change your diet, and then make the other changes.
Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, cool. Thank you.
Very good. Thank you for the call. And we'll continue here. The next caller up, I believe, would be on line number two, I think, right here. Hello.
Yes, I'm very interested in integrative medicine, and especially in a couple of different things. One is, this is a sort of specific question, but I have something called essential tremor, and they've been giving me what I think is a steroid, Canderol.
Uh-huh.
And I'd rather use something more herb-like or something that I can use on a long-term basis rather than something that obviously over the long term is, I guess, not a good idea. The other thing is I've been trying to find a good book. I've looked at a number of different things for the layperson about herbs, and I'm thinking of starting an herb garden and so on. And I look at various things, and they won't, for example, include scientific study information usually to any great degree, with a few exceptions like the Field Guide to Medicinal Plants and Herbs of the Peterson Field Guide series. That's quite good, but otherwise they don't give much information about that, and I can't seem to find any information on how to acquire the more rare herbs. And I certainly don't want to go out in the woods and poison myself or something like that.
Yeah, and that's something I strongly recommend not doing, is going out in the woods and trying to pick things, because herbs look different at different points in time in their growth.
Right.
When they are harvested, will have an effect on the concentration of various active ingredients.
Mm-hmm.
Where they're grown, are they grown in the mountains, are they grown in the forest? These are all very important things. I also agree with the fact that I haven't found any really one good source for herbs that give the studies and everything. And the reason for that probably is because the studies are pretty much happening now.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
So 10 years ago, 20 years ago, there weren't a lot of studies out there in the traditional American medical literature. But recognize that there are 16,000 medical journals in the world.
Mm-hmm.
25% of them are in English, mm-hmm. and probably less than 10% of those are readily available to a library. So,
Okay. I was sensing that the Germans, and then of course the Japanese, and to some extent the Chinese, they're all extremely much more, how should I say, interested in these issues.
Yeah,
and they probably have very good literature.
Yeah, Germans after the Second World War were really one group of people who held on to their herbal heritage. So there's something called the German E-Commission, which is similar to the U.S. FDA, and you can get that online, or they have it. You can get it through Amazon.com and places like that.
Well, what's that?
German E Commission.
A German E Commission. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you.
And the then a feature for the herbal.
Are you interested in the superfoods movement? Do you think that's a useful sort of as a preventive way of specifically targeting the kind of foods you eat?
Well, I think that the most important thing, well, let me say the second most important thing that you will ever do for your health is the food that you put into your mouth.
Mm-hmm.
I think that if you eat if you have moderation in all things, I think that ultimately you will have the greatest health. And I think that what data we have on that is showing it. Caloric restriction, instead of being 3,000 calories a day, 1,800 calories a day. I think that organic is generally better than conventionally grown for a number of reasons. And I know you probably get some, probably some phone calls from folks saying the opposite. But I think moderation rather than focusing on one or two different food groups. I think moderation is really going to be the key.
Well, great. And as far as essential tremor goes, that's just a very specific question.
Yeah, very specific question. We actually have seen this year alone, since January, we've probably seen about a half a dozen patients with essential tremor, and there are two things that I have found that generally work well for it.
Mm-hmm.
One, and this is going to sound a little bit wacky because it's something that we haven't done in traditional medicine for probably 40 years. B12 shots tend to work very, very well.
B12?
B12, vitamin B12 shots, not a B12 pill. About once a week for 4 to 5 weeks, the tremors get significantly better. I also recommend that patients with essential tremor take a very, very good Tai Chi class. Tai Chi class focuses a great deal on repetitive specific movements, and that will help with the essential tremor also.
Also, Tai Chi more than yoga, let's say.
Yeah. Yoga is very, very good. I like yoga, but yoga tends to be a little bit more stationary holding positions.
Right.
Tai Chi tends to be continuous repetitive movement, and that helps to re-educate the nerves, re-educate the muscles to move smoothly.
Great, thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, really appreciate it.
We're coming down to the point where we have only about maybe 10 minutes left. I want to just real quick follow up on you talking with somebody about red yeast rice.
Yes.
And I guess the reason that I ask, and you can tell me if my information on this is out of date, I had thought that this product, the FDA had looked at it, and they had made this decision that the active ingredient in this stuff was so chemically similar to the prescription statin Mevacor that FDA decided red yeast rice should be considered to be a drug and that it wasn't available in this country as an over-the-counter supplement anymore.
Yeah, it does contain Mevacor. It's the first case of a drug that was developed independent of any not knowledge of the molecular structure of Mevacor, and having found it nature. Now, there was actually a lawsuit compelling the manufacturers of red yeast rice to cease and desist, and most of them did. But in the past, I want to say 8 to 12 months, and my time frame may be off. Red yeast rice is readily available again, and is back on the market.
Mm. Well, then, that kind of leads to a question that why not take Mevacor? Instead,
yeah,
I mean, do we really know that one or the other is any better?
No, we actually don't, because nobody's actually done any kind of head-to-head drug trials, and actually there have been only really a handful of head-to-head drug trials in the history of modern drugs. But what we do know is that the amount of Mevacor that's in it is much less than in the prescription. And so there's a lot of Mevacor lookalike. So if you were to look at a plant that's making drug A, or making compound A, that plant will also make a number of compounds that look similar to it. So A prime, A two prime, A three prime kind of thing. And in red yeast rice, there's a lot of Mevacor lookalikes that probably have a similar effect on cholesterol, but maybe without the side effects.
Hmm.
So for my patients who have horrible heart disease and they have had heart attacks and they need to get their cholesterol down around 110 or 120, for those I will say you absolutely positively need a statin drug because there's nothing out there that's going to work for you. But for somebody who's 30 years old and active and their cholesterol is around 220, 225, and they're interested in doing something that is a little less intense than the drug, I will say let's try something like red yeast rice, and then if it doesn't get any better, then we can always fall back on the stronger medications.
Okay. Well, our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Dr. Patrick Massey. He's Medical Director for Complementary and Alternative Medicine at the Alexian Brothers Hospital Network in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. Questions are welcome. We'll try to get in as many as we can in the time remaining. Next caller in line is in Champaign, and I believe that's line one.
Yeah,
hello.
Thank you. I'd like to inject a note of caution for people who are thinking about self-treatment with herbs. As you know, you've already pointed out and are well aware, Ayurvedic medicine and Chinese medicine are highly sophisticated, and that very complex regime of assessment is done by a physician, if two different people come into the office with the same complaint, after going through this process of assessing them as individuals, they might receive very different treatments. And, this is a problem for somebody who just, maybe says, oh, well, I heard that this herb is good for this, and they go, self-prescribe it to themselves, that may not be the best thing for them to be taking. And in fact, usually there's a, like I know with Chinese medicine, there often are quite a number of different herbs that will be combined together in, a treatment for some particular person for whatever, problems they're having. And that over the course of they're being treated, they may change the combination just because they have changed themselves as they've responded to the treatment.
Yeah, you're absolutely right on the money. These culturally based medical systems have been around for thousands of years. They are very complex. And you can't learn Oriental medicine in the weekend, and you can't take a one month course in Ayurvedic medicine and become a good Ayurvedic practitioner. And one of the stumbling blocks in complementary and alternative medicine has been this absolute explosion of people selling things based upon a really a small piece of information. So, I mean, I totally agree with you. I don't recommend that somebody go out and take, Huang Lian for this or that or the other. These are complex medical systems that, similar to ours, you can't just play around with. You really have to have expertise in the area. So I completely agree with you.
Very good. Thanks for the call. Let's go next to Champagne and line 3 for someone else. Hello.
Hi. I was wondering if there's something that you know of that would work for a really bad case of restless leg syndrome that keeps people up at night.
Yeah, there's actually a number of things that I have found to work well. Vitamin E can be beneficial anywhere between 400 and 800 international units a day, which is two capsules. You really want to look for if the vitamin E bottle, if it says DL alpha, that at least half of it is inactive, so you want D or mixed tocopherols. That can be beneficial. I have also found in interestingly, especially in my elderly population, that stress stretching about 20 minutes before they go to bed, getting in about 10 minutes of stretching of the legs and the feet and the ankles, and makes a big difference in restless legs. Now, there are other reasons for having restless legs. It can be because of the drugs that you're taking or different medical conditions. But for
it's in a child, and it doesn't take any other medication except something to help her get through the night.
Yeah, I'd say try some yoga type stretches or some basic stress stretches, about 20 minutes to a half an hour before going to bed. My middle son grew real fast between the ages of about 10 to 13, and he would have restless legs and would wake up during the night with some pain and achiness, and we got him into some very good stress stretching regimen, and it disappeared.
Wow. Okay. We'll try that.
All right. Well, thanks very much for the call. I think we're coming to the point here where I'm sorry to say that we're going to have to stop, and we have a number of other callers, and we're just not going to be able to take them. Obviously, an indication of how much interest there is in alternative medicine. So perhaps we just have to say that we try to have a conversation again on another day.
Great.
But certainly, one place that people can go as a way of starting to investigate the subject is to this website that we've mentioned, AltMed. It's www.alt-med.com. www.bobmassey.org. There is information there about Dr. Massey, and then a number of complementary therapies where it gives you some basic definition about what they are, and then also suggestions about further reading and research that you can do to go from there. And again, as we've said, there's certainly now, because of the kind of interest, an awful lot of information on alternative medicine on the Internet. So if you have Internet access, that is something that you can do. Opportunities to do a lot of reading. I'm not sure how you sort the really good sites from those that aren't quite so good, though, because there is so much out there.
Well, that's very, very, very hard, and really, I mean, it's the Internet has so many positive things and so many negative things. The National Institutes of Health has a good is a good place to start. Other physician based sites and Andy Weil's and Andrew Weil's site, I think it's drweil.com. We also have another site at Alexian Brothers. It's called Alexian, Alexian, CAM, CAM.com. That has a lot of information on it. A lot of the larger universities, Stanford and University of Arizona, the University of Minnesota, have information also. So there's more information out there. Unfortunately, there's a lot of information that is quite questionable.
All right. Well, Dr. Massey, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you, Dave.
Our guest, Dr. Patrick Massey. He's Medical Director for Complementary and Alternative Medicine with the Alexian Brothers Hospital Network, based in Elk Grove Village, Illinois. The program today made possible by grants from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign and Crossroads Global Handcrafts for 28 North Main in Bloomington, providing income to third world artisans by marketing their handicrafts and telling their stories in North America. Focus 580 also made possible by a grant from Bodywork Associates this year, celebrating their 22nd anniversary. Bodywork Associates has been providing professional massage therapy to Champaign-Urbana since 1982. That's it for us on Focus. Up next is the Afternoon Magazine. The host, Celeste Quinn.
Thank you, David. Coming up today in the 1 o'clock hour of the Afternoon Magazine, we'll talk about presidential speaking styles with Alan Metcalf, professor of English at McMurray College and executive secretary of the American Dialect Society. Let's take a